This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
About 2 minutes past the hour, it's Wednesday, the 1st of December. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt on the radio program on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet. A little bit later, Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. And the story in the front page of the Toronto Star today, and I don't doubt it'll be in newspapers across the country tomorrow. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a one-day story. Rogers bids a $1.3 billion for Leafs empire. We'll address that subject, at least from a theoretical standpoint. Brian Cooper, the president of S&E Sponsorship Group, will join us in studio. And Brian's a regular contributor, as you know, to this program. So we'll discuss that a little bit later on. But first, here is the worst-kept secret in the history of secrets. Here is Mr. Sunday Night, the voice of ESPN Baseball on Sunday nights, Dan Shulman. They finally got around, those boneheads, finally got around to making a decision, huh?
Wait, last week they were maroons. Now they're boneheads?
Well, they were. I change it every week.
All right, I got nothing. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, apparently you're now going to be somewhere every Sunday night doing a baseball game. Did you know that?
Yes, I am, and I'm very excited. I never imagined, never thought, all that kind of stuff. It's really exciting. Somebody came up to me today, a friend of mine that I work at, so he works at ESPN, so he knew this was coming, and he said, you know, you're kind of replacing Cal Ripken, right? And I went, you know, because John Miller's done it for 21 years, the only guy who's ever had the job. And I said, you know, this is supposed to be helpful. You know, you're just piling more pressure on me. But I'm really excited. I'm excited to work with Oral Hershiser and Bobby Valentine. I mean, they're both really, really smart guys who know the game inside and out. And you know what I'm most excited about is a lot of times you can't find games on in Canada, depending what package you've got. I mean, you know, now I know my dad can watch the game every Sunday night and that kind of stuff. And I'm just excited to be, back on Canadian TV a little bit more as well, because it gets picked up in Canada.
All right, so let's get to the real heart of the story. The truth of the matter is that the delay in making this announcement, which was an inordinate, was as a direct result of the contractual dispute that ensued when they offered you some cheese ball money and you said, you know, come to the table.
No,
I'm Dan Bleepin' Shulman.
No.
I want big bucks. Add some zeros, you cheap bastards.
You want the truth, or you want me to make something up?
I'd rather you made something up, because truth is really boring.
They insisted that I get hair transplants, and I balked at that. So we've been fighting.
That's good.
You know, bald people are persecuted.
Wait a second.
I didn't see that one coming, Dan. That's excellent.
A hair transplant?
Transplant? What plant?
From where?
From where? Oh, it's I.
Are there parts of your body that still grow?
That's not a topic we need to discuss.
The harvesting aspect.
Besides your ears, inside of your ears, is there any place else that? Have you found increasingly that there's more hair in your ears than on any other part of your body lately?
You know what? Of all the things we could talk about, this was not on the list.
You brought it up. You mentioned hair transplants, not me.
That's true.
Did you get a parking spot in Bristol? Because Bob would like to know that.
I never go to Bristol.
So you don't have a parking spot anywhere.
So you don't have
a parking spot.
I know that's a sore point.
You don't have ESPN doesn't give you a parking spot.
I don't go to Bristol.
It doesn't matter.
I'll ask.
Get a spot.
I'll ask. So no.
And then
whatever the delay was, and this is the honest to God's truth, it had nothing to do with me. I think they were tying up loose ends with other people. So I was raring to go, just waiting for the go-ahead from them. So, and it finally came in the last couple of days.
Well, good for you for not spilling the beans on some cheeseball radio show in Canada, Dan.
I tried to kind of, not really, but sort of do it. But come on, guys. You didn't make it easy on me over the last 3 weeks.
Well, No.
No, you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to.
It's not what we do.
I know.
But see, you need whoever your duly anointed or appointed representative is has to understand the quid pro quo of negotiating. You ask for a parking spot that you have no use for.
Uh-huh.
And when they refuse, you say, all right, well, in lieu of that.
Well, I was going to ask for the parking spot, but they gave me the helipad instead, so I thought that was better.
Giddy up. Now if you only had a helicopter to land there.
Oh, damn, I knew I forgot something.
You know what I'd do?
I'd park the Chevette on the helipad.
That's a good idea.
Just to piss him off.
That's a good idea. So we had a conference call today.
Oh, yeah?
You know how these things. This is my first, like...
Is this like a media conference call?
Yeah. I've never had one of these before.
This is the one Heastan was talking about, Bob. Remember? Yeah. We got the other side of it, Dan, so I'd like to hear your version.
Who did you talk to?
Michael Heastan from USA Today.
Yeah, Michael was on there. So Michael didn't ask me a question. Hardly anybody asked me a question. There were like 30 or 40 questions. I think I got asked two, and I was feeling sorry for myself, so I interrupted somebody else and threw in a third answer at some point later on. But the first question I got asked was about being Canadian. And, you know, how big I was into baseball as a kid and who were my influences and stuff like that. So, you know, got to talk a little bit about the snow in April 7, 77 and talked a lot about Tom Cheek, actually, and what an influence he was on me. And I have said before and will say again, you know, we've all met a lot of, you know, very important people in the sports world in our lives. The most nervous I've ever been in my life was that first day in the old Holly Street newsroom, 1990, when Tom Cheek walked in and I met Tom Cheek for the first time. So should be in the Hall of Fame, is on the ballot. I hope he gets in the Hall of Fame. And without question, whenever anybody asks me, you know, who's your biggest broadcasting influence, it's Tom.
You're here.
Okay, enough about you. Let's talk about me.
Okay. You're my second biggest broadcasting influence.
Well, I already told the story about walking over to on Holly Street on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon when you were over there, when you were a snot-nosed punk, skinny little kid. And
working, with a full head of hair.
Working, as I recall, working weekends.
Are we talking the first Saturday way back when?
Well, the first time I met you. I don't know if you remember that. I walked over on a Saturday or Sunday. You were alone in the newsroom, and
I do.
And I just introduced myself, and I said, I don't remember what I said, but I said, I think you got a chance. So, I'm wrong sometimes.
Well, you know what? I remember. I mean, the early days with anything like your first car, you have a special. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Right. The early days, right? And I mean, my, you know, you go back a few years more. Obviously, Bob, then I do. But the early days for me were 1990, 1991. As you know, as CJCL was morphing into the Fan, that's
right.
When I was lucky enough to get there. I had exceedingly good luck in the timing when I got there. And from what I recall, it started with you doing Saturday afternoons 5 to 8, and me doing 8 to midnight. And then we kind of made that into a 5-day-a-week thing, and so on and so on. And we were lucky, right? The Jays were great. The Leafs were great. The timing was great. And it was a lot of fun. We didn't know what we were. At least I didn't know what I was doing half the time. But we sure had a good time doing it.
Well, and then you wound up doing early afternoons ahead of prime time, and we did 1 hour together, you and I and Barb.
Yes.
And I always forget the name of that show. Do you remember it?
It was, Barb would know. It was Barb and the something, and we were the somethings, but whatever it wasn't flattering. It was very accurate and entirely unflattering. What was it? Barb and the...
I don't think it was Barb and the thing. I think it was something else, but I don't remember what it was.
It was not like Beauty and the Beast, but it was something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was something like that.
Somebody will call in and remind us.
Yeah, I was noon to 4, you were 3 to 7, so we overlapped from 3 to 4.
Yeah.
And then eventually, they paid you enough money to go to the morning show.
And that's when you took over this show.
Yes.
And damn near ruined it, and then I had to come back and save it. I'm kidding. Let's talk about some baseball stuff real quickly before we move along. By the way, sincere congratulations.
Yes.
I mean, we already
well done, Danny.
We already did that. I know several weeks ago because we knew that this was coming for you, but we couldn't be happier for it, Pat.
Thank you. I'm very excited, and I appreciate all the good wishes I've gotten from everybody who works in the Rogers family.
The Derek Jeter saga appears to be moving a little bit, and moving in the direction I think we most of us anticipated. To wit. Jeter's going to have to take a bit of a haircut because there's no other buyers out there, at least presumably, and yet the Yankees are not going to go stupid. They're not going to give him $19 million a year on a long-term contract.
I agree 100%. He's worth more to them than he is to anybody else, and it ain't even close. Because Mystique and Aura and Monument Park and all that doesn't mean anything if he's playing for the Houston Astros. If he's playing for the Houston Astros, he's a 36-year-old, 270. And I love Derek Jeter. I think he's been a phenomenal player, a winner, all of that stuff. But he's 35, turning 36, diminishing range, diminishing skills. 3 years, 45, not bad. $15 million a year for that, I think, is great. And I agree with you. If he wants to finish his career as a New York Yankee, if he wants his legacy to be he played his whole career for the Yankees and goes down as one of the winningest and greatest Yankees of all time, he's going to have to swallow some pride. And to be honest with you, we'd all swallow a lot more. You know, we'd swallow a lot of pride for $15 million a season. I mean, that's not bad at this point of his career. And if he wants... you know, 5 years at $19 million per, he's not going to get it. He's not going to get it from anybody else. I don't think he's got the leverage because, as you say, I don't think anybody else is going to pay him much more than the Yankees or anywhere close to what the Yankees
I think, Dan, that Brian Cashman played this one pretty well, too, because obviously there was a minefield in terms of PR when you start messing with Derek Jeter in New York, but... you know, I think the Yankee position was reasonable from the outset. They, you know, they played a little bit of hardball, but it's only because the asking price was just so outrageous.
I think so. And I think, you know, Jeter's camp could have made this uglier, and I think they've only made it a little ugly. And Brian Cashman somehow managed to keep Hank Steinbrenner largely out of this, and that kept it from getting ugly because he is his father's son. But I think I agree with you. I think the Yankees have played this perfectly. And there is room for sentiment. I understand that. And Brian Cashman has said the right things. He said, you know what, when we made him this offer, we factored what a great Yankee he's been into the offer, insinuating he's not even worth $15 million a year, but they're going to give him that because of what he's done for the franchise over the last, whatever it is, 15 years. And when I heard 3 years, $45 million, I thought, that's a very fair offer. Given all the intangibles that Derek Jeter brings, he'll take it. I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to get it done. He's not going to be a Tiger, an Astro, or a Cardinal. He's going to be a New York Yankee. The next big question, of course, is at what point, if it happens, do they move him out of shortstop? And if so, where to? I mean, there are not very many 37, 38, 39-year-old shortstops playing baseball, and at some point, he might have to find another position.
Where do you think Cliff Lee lands? Is it the obvious, the New York Yankees?
I don't think it is. You know what? And maybe I'm naive. I think if the money is close, he'll go somewhere else, and I assume that is Texas. I'm not sure another team isn't going to swoop in at the last second and make him an offer. If the Yankees blow everybody else's offer away, he's got to go to New York. I don't think he wants to go to New York. Small town, Arkansas guy, really grounded. I don't think he wants to go there. And I think he's hoping that another offer is close enough that he can take it and stay where he is. If I'm Cliff Lee, you know, maybe there's a great National League contender out there that I can go to, but I don't know if the Cardinals or Braves or Dodgers or Giants are paying up that kind of money. And from what it sounds like, it's only Texas and the Yankees right now. But I've got a funny feeling the Yankees aren't going to win this one.
You don't think they're going to overpay, like way overpay here?
Well, they'd have to way overpay. I mean, if Texas gives them 5 years, 110, mm-hmm. and the Yankees give them 5 years, 115,
He stays.
But if they give him 5 years, 140, you know, then we've got a situation. So.
And the Rangers have offered salary arbitration, which Cliff Lee has declined. Does that mean anything? Or is that pretty obvious?
I don't think so in terms of the long-term deal. I don't think it does. I don't think it creates any animosity or anything like that. I mean, Cliff Lee, in one sense, is a 21st century athlete to a T. It's a business to him. He largely takes his emotion out of it. He understands not only the player's side, he understands the team's right to trade him in the middle of the season, which has been done twice, to not offer him arbitration, to not tender him a contract, whatever the case may be. And he doesn't hold any grudges over it. So I think he understands it's a business, and he's just sitting back and waiting for the situation, not necessarily the offer, the situation that suits him the best.
The name of the 3 to 4 segment with Dan Shulman, Barb DiGiulio, and yours truly.
It's going to kill me. It's something and the somethings.
You are correct about that.
Yeah.
Lady.
And the Tramps.
And the Tramps.
Boy, I wonder why that didn't stick.
Well, I think Barb didn't like being called a tramp, and
yeah,
Dan was a little iffy on the lady part. There you go. So that was the end of that.
That was the end of that.
But, Shulman, congratulations on the new gig. We hope you hold on to it for as long as you want it.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, and I hope so, too. Have a great day, guys.
You, too. We'll talk to you soon. Dan Shulman of ESPN. There's more ahead when Primetime Sports continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97 and Rogers Sportsnet.
It's a sad day to talk about the passing of Jim Kelly. This was a real solid hockey guy. He loved the game. He had passion for the game. He had integrity in the game and the way he covered it. He was a great storyteller. He was friendly with players, management, coaches, everybody, all the other media. And I think probably part of an era that we won't see again in this age of electronic media and social networking and all those things. I remember how he handled the Dominic Hasek incident, where Dominic Hasek, you know, in a fit of pique, assaulted him, for lack of a better word, actually went after him. And it was captured on videotape, and we were never, it's funny, the league was never notified or complained to by Jim Kelly. It came to light through a security camera. It's a guy who figured this guy had a bad day. He was a player that he covered and respected, and he was going to let this pass. And then we decided you know, the league decided that they couldn't do that. But that's the kind of gentleman he was. Today, there'd be lawyers and hearings and inquisitions. And so I considered Jim a good friend. I'll miss him. And my prayers and condolences go out to his family and friends.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
This is Paul Kelly from College Hockey Incorporated, and I'm calling in just to, you know, pass along my deepest sympathies to the family of Jim Kelly. I got to know Jim pretty well, you know, during my couple of years with the National Hockey League Players Association, and you know, I was fortunate enough just to spend some time with Jim about a month ago at the USA Hockey Hall of Fame dinner in Buffalo, and we sat together and talked for a good period of time. And, you know, one of the things I admired about Jim is, you know, he was in great spirits to the end, even though he obviously was suffering from some medical problems. He was in good humor and still passionate about the sport, and frankly, you know, right to the very end, you know, one of his last acts, of course, was to write a terrific article about Brian Burke's 2-year tenure with the Maple Leafs, which was, you know, direct and blunt and, you know, typical Jim Kelly. So he will be sorely missed, but he will be remembered by all of us in the hockey business as just a great guy and a better person. So we will miss him. But thanks to offer my thoughts.
And we are back on Primetime Sports now, 25 minutes past the hour. Brian Cooper joins us in studio, as mentioned earlier today. And if you live in Southern Ontario, you probably have seen this this headline, or at the very least heard about the story. And it was in the Toronto Star bright and early this morning. Rogers bids $1.3 billion for Leafs empire. Brian Cooper joins us in studio. What's the name of that company again? Sports and Entertainment, no, S&E Sponsorship Group. That's what it is now.
I'm surprised I have $1.3 billion left after paying you.
Good point.
And that's one of the reasons why I don't think this story is true, because I don't believe they do. And if it is true, then clearly I am underpaid.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, before I try and preface this with my own comments, your general reaction when you woke up this morning and I guess picked up the Toronto Star, or I don't know what you did, but how you found out about it. But so at 9 o'clock this morning, or 7 o'clock this morning, or whenever you, what was your first reaction?
Of course, they should be buying this. They are the most likely strategic buyer of this group of assets of anybody in the country. Mm-hmm. And you know, if, and I said it earlier today, if you know, content is king, they're buying the kingdom.
Doesn't almost have to be, you know, like of the potential buyers out there, it would seem to me there's two. There's Rogers and there's Bell, the two.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, this is not about Sportsnet or TSN. This is about Bell. It's about content distribution, the BDUs. That's what it's about. It's not about those sport networks. This is about all of the other platforms that they're going to use this exclusive content to entice people to buy the wireless, to buy the internet, to get the bundled packages. That's what it's about.
So is it fair to say that the teachers, not being a bunch of dopes, would be aware that a buyer such as, or a potential buyer such as Rogers or Bell, would have the unique ability to expand the empire or expand the EBITDA?
Without a doubt. I mean, look, the teacher's in the business of buying and selling properties.
Sure. So they know
a strategic buyer is going to pay a multiple much higher than anyone
and
else.
And that's what I was getting at.
Right. Without a doubt. They're. But, you know, by the way, I mean, I've been hearing that teacher's been shopping this for quite some time now. This is not, you know, hey, you know, we're ready
so
to sell it.
Are you confirming that, too? Because we've heard it for part of a year.
I've heard it from multiple sources for not about a year, but at least for 8 months. That there had been meetings going on, or just, you know, indications of interest. They were seeking indications of interest.
Well, and that's, and again, we want to confirm, too, that this is not about the teachers hanging out the for sale sign and waiting for the phone to ring.
No.
They have been proactive in seeking out
the likely buyers.
Correct.
And you know what? There are emotional buyers out there that, you know, this is an iconic property in the sports landscape and entertainment landscape of Canada. if not North America.
But Brian, there's no emotional buyers at $1.5 billion, though, are there? Like that's the play.
There's a lot of money out there.
But if the Leafs were sitting there,
we've gone through a downturn. There's a lot of money out there, especially for sport. I've seen steely-eyed businessmen turn into something less than prudent businessmen when it comes to sport practice.
I have too, and I've seen it over and over. It's one of the great secrets of sports ownership. It's one of the great reasons why because they're always worth more than they're worth what they are emotionally, and you have all kinds of emotional buys, and it gives people status.
It's great cocktail chatter.
All kinds of great stuff, right? But at one point, you know, say $1.5 billion or whatever we're talking here, it's hard to make that's more than putting your name on the marquee. You know, you have to have some kind of a rationale for that, I would think. And again, I can't think of anybody who has a rationale other than a communications company.
Steve, yeah. I agree with you 100%.
I mean,
it makes all the sense when you can spread it out over four or five divisions and you can amortize it for the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
But if it is an individual, it is definitely more difficult. But look, this is an organization that is spitting out some good cash flow.
What do you think?
I wouldn't venture to guess.
No, come on. Guess.
I wouldn't venture to guess, Bob. I don't know.
All right. So let me throw out a number, and you tell me whether you think, with no expert level of expertise
door
at all.
Number two.
Is this reasonable? $120 million a year
That's
EBITDA.
That's reasonable.
That would make them by far the most profitable in the National Hockey
right.
League. By maybe as much as a third.
Are you saying the Leafs spit that out or the entire
Leafs?
Saying,
Leafs.
No, I wouldn't say the Leafs spit out that much. You know, I would say more in the $80, $90 million.
Well, but wait a second. The Montreal Canadiens, when George Gillette owned the Montreal Canadiens in the last year, they spit out about $70 million
right.
EBITDA or whatever.
Right. Look, but you know what?
You don't think the Leafs were significantly higher?
No. Are you serious? I deal with the Canadiens. Their sponsorship requests are as high as, if not higher, than the Leafs.
They are really high.
Without a doubt.
But I know they have a bigger arena.
Bigger building, yeah.
Yeah, they have a big, it's not even that. It's they've got a captive audience in the entire
province,
without a doubt, on television.
Of course.
They are the most iconic brand in that province, bar none. So they have the ability to charge premium dollars, and in fact, equal to the Leafs, if not more.
Okay, so you've gone from I have no idea to disputing my number and giving me the rationale for it. So let's take it a step further here. What do you think the Raptors spit out? 20?
If that.
Maybe.
Yeah, if that. Television numbers, I mean, the Leafs are getting 750 a game, approximately, right. What I heard. The Raptors aren't getting that.
No, they're getting, right. Soccer team.
You know, $10 million, yeah. I would
okay.
Think.
And.
This is all guesswork, by the way.
Yeah. Here goes back to the disclaimer.
Yeah,
after
no,
saying,
totally.
120? No, you're wrong about that. I don't know, but I know you're wrong.
That. Did not
That's
say
what
that.
You said exactly. I'm paraphrasing only marginally. And the Marlies are a dog with fleas, but what would that cost them? A couple, $3 million a year?
I think it's a loss. Yeah, at least $3 million. But you know what? Are you going to go through the whole P&L here?
No. Well, I'm trying to but there's that's the four sports franchises, right?
Right. Yeah, but the venue itself, you know, real sports is kicking off a couple $100,000 in gross revenue. Well, excuse me. And I heard they're doing like $400,000 in gross a week. You know, for a bar restaurant, that is like enormous.
Well, I hear their EBITDA will be between 5 and 10 million.
Yeah. For year one.
Yeah, well, year one, but you know the...
I own a restaurant.
Well...
I could only wish.
Yeah.
You've been there as well, Bobby.
Thank God I was there, too, because...
Anyway, the point is...
You wouldn't have sold any pizza that month.
The point is, you know, it's a good, profitable business. So, on its own, would people be interested? Yes. But, you know, go back to the whole content play with the, you know, television networks that they currently have. With the content that they can provide, the extra content beyond the games.
Well, and that's how you get to the number where teachers think they're better out than in, right? Because at a certain point, if
right.
otherwise they'll just sit there and take their return.
Right.
But it has to be a number that's convincing.
Well, but my point here, what I was trying to get at, guys, is that effectively, here's what's happening. You are overpaying to acquire the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you get all these other things that have negligible, if any, positive impact on your bottom line
today.
With it
today, Yeah, and the massive numbers for new Canadians that are following the Raptors, massive numbers of new Canadians, not massive, but strong core numbers on the soccer as well. You know, every kid out there is trying to is using a wireless handheld.
You are the spinner of great positive
news. Well, it's cheaper to own it than to buy it, too.
These guys are visionary.
Well, let's look at the rest of the NBA. You've got a huge issue. With respect to the CBA, you've got franchises that can't survive. You've got a commissioner that's talking about downsizing.
They're looking 10, 15 years down the road and amortizing over that time frame. There'll be new platforms out there. What they do know today is that sport drives new platforms and that it's anti-PVR.
What is the new platform that's coming?
I don't know. Maybe it's your pen is talking to you. I have no idea. But there could be a new communications platform down the road.
People are loyal to it.
Hello.
PVR. It's PVR proof, right?
It's PVR proof. I mean, yep.
Not so far.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying?
Hello.
And, you know, Bob, they've dropped, you know, you think about Rogers' investment in the Toronto Blue Jays over the years, which at the beginning was more of a straight sports play, affiliation play. But now I think they're pretty darn happy to have 162 games of content every year, even if they're only drawn.
And they're using it to drive Sportsnet 1. I mean, this is a smart move, especially for them. I can't think of a more strategic buyer than them.
Do you think it's going to happen?
Oh, I wouldn't guess. I have no idea. I mean, obviously, where there's smoke, there's fire. So the conversations are going on. Now it comes down, can a deal be made? You know, and you know, the other side is, Rogers all of a sudden has some pretty smart sports guys in Keith and Scott Moore. All of a sudden, it looks like the stars are aligning. I mean, these guys know what they're doing.
Well, we'll see.
Kind of explains why the top guy might have wanted to come here.
Who, KP?
Yeah.
Well, if this was in play before.
That's what I'm wondering.
I wonder if it was in play before or whether this was an idea that Pelly brought to them.
Now it's a conspiracy theory.
I have lived on a grassy knoll my entire life, Cooper.
Exactly. I looked at the library building.
All right, get lost. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Where the hell? Where are my notes here? I got to have my notes because I can't remember the name of his dumb company here. He changed the name of the company. I knew it by heart, but it's now S&D Sponsorship Group. Brian Cooper is the president. CEO, COO, chief bottle washer, and who the hell knows what else. If you call now, he'll answer the phone. Back with more. Primetime will continue on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet.
This is Gary Bettman from the National Hockey League, and I wanted to express the condolences of the entire NHL to the Kelly family on Jim's passing. The great ones always die too young, and Jim was certainly one of the great ones. He was unrivaled when it came to covering our game. He was knowledgeable. He was passionate. And even if you disagreed with what he was saying or writing, you knew it came from the heart and you had the utmost respect for him and his views. We're all going to miss him, and we wish his family nothing but the best as they have our thoughts and prayers going forward.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
This is Roy Malacher, the former longtime president and CEO of the Ottawa Senators, Pittsburgh Penguins, and Los Angeles Kings. I've known Jim Kelly for well over 25 years, both professionally and personally. Really can't honestly say we always shared the same views, especially when it came to my good friend and colleague John Muckler, when Jim was a columnist in Buffalo. He and Mux went at it quite a few times, but one of the things about Jim is it was always one-on-one. No audience, no disrespect, always professional. And there was another side of Jim Kelly that some of us know. He was a kind, caring, heartfelt man away from his pen or microphone. He was sincere about people and about life. A must-read column is Jim's second last 2 days ago on Rogers Sportsnet. .ca when he had a conversation for the last time with Pat Burns. Compassionate and cheering one last time when they talked about their great love and passion for hockey. And that he did. May he be at peace.
That's Roy Malacher. Primetime Sports continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet. Bob McCowan. Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. Here's our friend Don Banks of SI.com. Hello, Banks. How are you?
I'm good, guys.
So James Harrison has now been convicted 12 times for assault with a helmet, fined something in the neighborhood of $1.3 billion. And, oh, no, that's what Rogers is paying for the Maple Leafs. Extraordinary amount. And his teammate, Hines Ward, is whining and complaining about the National Football League and its policy, saying it has something to do with the expansion to an 18-game schedule. Am I supposed to believe any of this?
You know, Pittsburgh's actually been the most vocal team so far about the new emphasis on the rules. Troy Polamalu came out and basically said it's not fair for the commissioner to hand out the fines and then be the arbiter of any appeals and ask for a player committee. I think they play an aggressive brand of football in Pittsburgh, and I think they're probably feeling this effort and this emphasis more than any other place. But they're not going to win this one. They're going to have to change how they hit, and otherwise they're going to keep getting docked. And I think Mr. Harrison is up to $125K over the course of four fines this year.
Well, and that is the point, right, Don? Goodell wanted to change the way things happen and change them quickly, change them instantly, and there has been no backsliding on this at all.
Well, and there can't be, because if there is, I mean, what's the point of everything you've done so far? You kind of have to be consistent, and the players are eventually going to get on the program when the dollar amount hurts them, so to speak. So I think everything that's coming out of Pittsburgh, I'm kind of letting go in one ear and out the other, because right now it's not going to mean anything in the long run, I don't believe. I think Roger Goodell has got his feet dug in firmly on this issue.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Now, where do you come down on the other great compelling issue this week, the laughing Derek Anderson issue? Because I don't know if people know this, but the shot, Monday Night Football, the Cardinals are getting their heads handed to them. He's having a terrible game. Television cameras catch him chuckling on the sidelines with one of his offensive linemen. I think John Gruden makes a big deal of it on the broadcast. And then there's a blow-up afterwards in the scrum with reporters when someone asks him what was so funny.
Well, I know the reporter, Kent Summers, who's an excellent beat man for the Arizona Republic. He is hardly a confrontational type reporter. He's a very good reporter, but he is respectful in all ways. And if you listen to the interview, I think he asked legitimate questions. He's supposed to be there asking questions that the fan would ask. And after, you know, frankly, after Gruden spotlighted it, it became the issue that Kent, I think, had to ask about. And, you know, it struck me, and I see Anderson apologize today, but it struck me immediately watching it as, me thinks he doth protest too much. He made a big deal of how hard he works, which was completely and utterly off point. Every starting quarterback in the NFL works hard. Not all of them, though, have as shoddy starting record as Derek Anderson does, who played really badly. He should have come out and said, look, you're probably right. It wasn't the time, you know, to be laughing about anything. We're getting our butts kicked. But Deuce said something funny. It lightened the mood, and it doesn't take away from the fact that we were utterly embarrassed by this performance. And then it's a non-story.
Yep.
But instead, he tried to act like I wasn't laughing when the video was pretty damning on that front. And then he tried to just turn the whole thing back at Kent Summers, and I think he came off looking like an idiot.
What do you do if you're the Arizona Cardinals as a result of that? Now, I mean, I grant you that they have no real mandate to, I mean, he made himself look like an idiot, so they have no mandate to respond in any way, shape, or form, but I think maybe they should.
Well, Ken Wisenhunt, the head coach, came out and said he could have handled it better and wished he would have responded.
That's lame, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, a little bit. But when Derek Anderson apologized today, I clearly thought, well, the organization said you need to try to do some damage control on this front because you are taking a beating and you were in the wrong. And, you know, then it'll fade because our attention span is about 5 minutes long with NFL stories. But, Derek Anderson kind of whined his way out of Cleveland a little bit. Didn't fear.
No, he played his way out. Trust me.
Yeah, that had a big deal to do with it as well. But I remember when he was whining that Brady Quinn, probably rightfully so, was getting a shot because of where he was drafted and he wasn't. But now, unfortunately, with this episode, he just kind of reinforces the whiner label a little.
Well, it is true. As a Cleveland Browns fan, that Derek Anderson was the be all
personal,
and end all. Nothing personal, but I mean, he was the be all and end all, and was unjustly kicked out of the number one starting spot after a spectacular, if brief, performance as the number one quarterback. For the possibility of Brady Quinn.
Not that you remember any of that, Bob. Not
no,
that it's
burned
into your memory.
I remember how in the world he even had that 10-win season now in, what was it? Would have been 07, I believe, right?
Here, it's two words. Defense.
Well, I didn't remember it that way. I know he actually went to a Pro Bowl once upon a time, but watching.
Oh, yeah, but he went to a Pro Bowl after 12 guys said, I ain't going to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Welcome to
that's how he
welcome
got
to the Cleveland Browns Hour again.
That he got, that's how he got to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I think there was a breakout of influenza that February. So
Don, that Cards franchise looks is that it's not that long ago there in the Super Bowl. Is the free fall is it totally explicable by Kurt Warner gone and the liner succession plan didn't work, right?
Correct.
You know, I happen to think even if Kurt Warner was there, I think they were going to struggle with that defense the way it's played this year. I will say, for the life of me, I still don't understand Wisenhunt pulling the plug on the Matt Leinart era and turning it into the Matt Leinart era as quickly as he did. I mean, you know, seeing what we've seen subsequent, could Matt Leinart have played any worse than the collection of Derek Anderson and Max Hall, the rookie who clearly is not ready? And I still don't get it, because we went from an off season where Leinart was supposedly the guy and going to get a shot, and again, he didn't play that badly as a rookie and as a second-year guy. If you go back and actually look at the numbers, there were some clear bright spots there. He had a 400-yard passing game. He had a couple 300-yard passing games. And so how did we go from that to Derek Anderson as our best option to win? Clearly, I think he blew that call, and I think it pretty much led to the season kind of going down a downward spiral.
A little tight for time, but can you explain why the Dallas Cowboys are getting another primetime matchup?
It's because of who they're playing.
Eagles? Is it the Eagles?
Michael Vick. It's all Michael Vick. NBC does not want to miss a chance that Michael Vick might do what he did that Monday night against Washington. And the fact that Jason Garrett has breathed life into the Cowboys, they're 2-1, and they almost were 3-0. That's it.
Well, I'm marginally interested in Michael Vick. I have no interest in the Dallas Cowboys, and I can't imagine that anybody else does. But then again, they are America's team, and I guess it's a story.
Love them or loathe them, you kind of watch them, because you either love to see them go down in flames, or you're a Cowboys lover and you watch them to see them win.
Thank you, Mr. Banks, as always, and have a nice rest of the week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Don Banks of SI.com. We have come to the end of this program. It is, it's been enjoyable, but it's been a difficult 3 hours in total, the last hour on this network. I said off the top of this broadcast almost 3 hours ago that the wounds of the news of Jim Kelly's passing were still too raw for me to address in a meaningful fashion, and I hope you understand that. There will come a time later this week when we'll be able to address these issues more succinctly. Mr. Brunt had something to say a little bit earlier, and I'm hopeful that by the time Friday rolls around and on the roundtable, we'll be able to have a nice long chat about Jim Kelly and what he meant to everybody here. Our thanks to Dan Shulman, Don Banks, and Brian Cooper for joining us on the program. And to Jim, good night from Toronto.
Hey, this is Bill Daly of the National Hockey League. Obviously, the hockey world and the NHL world has lost a dear friend today with the passing of Jim Kelly. Jim was someone who was committed to hockey, a sport he loved, but more importantly, was committed to his community, his profession, and to his family. He was a smart man and a man of principle, and my thoughts on behalf of the National Hockey League and prayers go out to his family and friends.